is mentioned on Thursdays to do a little bit on the parsha, one aliyah a week. So therefore, we're up to Sheni this year. So to do Sheni of Parshas Korach. But I'm always interested in synergy. You can find references and connections to whatever is going on in the Limud during the week, within not only within the Parsha, but especially when it happens to work out specifically within the Aliyah that we have looked at for the Parsha. So that's the case as well tonight, that I'd like to say a few more words about the Isser that we talked about during the week, one of the Isser that we talked about during the week, the Isser of Lo Sirda Lefarach, about not working people too hard, working people against their will. And as we see, that actually will come up in the very brief second aliyah of Parshas Korach. It's really definitely basher at the amount of times this happens. So it's not a very long aliyah at all, but there are some significant, important points, as with all the Torah. But included in this brief aliyah, there is what to talk about of some particular interest. So we know that Parshas Korach in general, the whole Parsha, the theme that comes to mind is the theme of Machlokas. That there is a prohibition of Machlokas, possibly the way the Gemara suggests in the end of Sanhedrin, based on Korach, the Isser of Osia Kekorach Va'adaso, is considered to be the prohibition of Machlokas to those Moni HaMitzvos who count it as a prohibition. And we know that the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos identifies Korach Va'adaso as emblematic of a Machlokas Shelo L'shem Shamayim. And in this Aliyah as well, there is a particular relevance to Machlokas and to the Halachas regulating Machlokas, but requires a little bit of introduction just before we point out the connection. But basically, just in terms of setting up the action, so what's going on here is we know that Korach has got together his band of rebels, he's got together his group of people, and we have Dasan Ve'Aviram involved, and Moshe is trying to settle with them. Moshe is trying to make peace, and so in the end of Rishon, we find that Vayishlach Moshe l'kro l'Dasan Ve'Aviram b'nei Eliyav v'yomru lo na'aleh. And it's interesting, the second aliyah kind of comes in the middle of a sentence, so to speak. So right after they've said that, so continuing their conversation, the second aliyah begins, Aflo al eretz avos chalav udvash, hevi asanu, vatite lenu nachlas sadeh v'chorem, ha'inei ha'anashim ha'heim t'naker, lo na'ale. So that last part of the sentence is particularly significant. That basically it's saying that they're refusing to come, and that Moshe has not been a great leader to us, they're claiming, and that even if the eyes of these people, our eyes, even if you would poke our eyes out, we're not going to come. We're not going to show up. So this is relevant to Halacha L'maaseh, this line. The Gemara Maseches Moed Katan tells us an interesting halacha based on this line. It requires a little bit of introduction. Before we mention specifically the reference the Gemara has, it may be that this is what it's getting at, but Yerushalmi, in the beginning of Maseches Peah, has a halacha. If you want to know the halachas of Lashon Hara, so in the Bavli, so we don't have a Masechta about Lashon Hara, but in the Bavli, in the middle of Maseches Erchin is where you find a lot of the references to Lashon Hara. And in the Yerushalmi, there is a similar passage. In the beginning of Maseches Peah, in the Yerushalmi, there are many, many statements about the prohibition of Lashon Hara. So there you find the statement that it's mutter l'saper Lashon Hara al balei machlokas. You have people who are troublemakers, people who like to start a fight, so it's permissible to speak Lashon Hara about that. So that's an interesting question, whether or not that is true l'halacha. You don't find that necessarily in some of the Sfarim, such as the Rambam. But there are many of the Moni HaMitzvahs who do bring it. The Smag brings it, and the Smak brings it, and the Sefer Chassidim brings it. Magen Avraham quotes it. And the Chafetz Chaim quotes it as well, but very tentatively. We'll mention his modifications in a second. Rabbi Akiva Eger, in his comments to the Yerushalmi, Rabbi Akiva Eger notes that this should not be taken as a blanket heter, that you can say whatever you want about people who are disputatious, but that this is only for the purposes of silencing the machlokas. That you have people who are engaged in active machlokas, so that's a terrible thing. So therefore, in order to stop that from happening, you can identify the people as bali machlokas. You can point out that that's what's going on to the extent that that will quiet down the machlokas. Which seems to be saying that the way he understands it is that essentially this is a function of toelis. It's not some kind of blanket heter that there's no concept of lashon hara that applies when you're dealing with bali machlokas, but because of the need to stop the machlokas, so therefore we allow you to say something to that end. And that also seems to be the attitude of the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim does discuss this. This is in Hilchos Lashon Hara in Perek Ches and Klal Ches, in the Sefer Chafetz Chaim. But he also has a lot of conditions. He has that you have to only have the intent to quiet down the machlokas, and you can't have any other purpose, and you have to know that they're bali machlokas because that is your own direct knowledge, not because somebody else told you about it. And you also should not be too quick to judge people as bali machlokas. If you can't really figure out what exactly the story is, so then sheva al taisa adif, better to stay out of it. But theoretically, if you know who the bali machlokas are, who people who are just troublemakers are, and you can affect the situation by saying something, so then there is a heter to say something. So it seems to be that this is a very limited heter, the way Rabbi Akiva Eiger and the way the Chafetz Chaim understand it, that essentially it's a function of the toelis idea that we know in Hilchos Lashon Hara, that there is such a notion that if you're going to affect the purpose, so then it is permissible. It's interesting to note the Chafetz Chaim Sofer in his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch. The Chaim Sofer has a unique formulation, which I wonder how specific he means to be here, where he says that you can say something just once in order to identify that this is Baal Machlokas Shalo. His formulation, I think, is interesting. Maybe he means to say not necessarily that there are people who are troublemakers in general, but it's somebody who you are in a machlokas with. You are a machlokas with. It's a machlokas shalo. So maybe he's really saying that it's not about the character of the people, but it's about the fact that there is a dispute going on, and therefore that could impact on how things are going to play out. And you have a right to clarify that fact. You have a right to identify that the people you're talking about are bali machlokas shalo. It's interesting to note, though, that however you see the Chafetz Chaim and Rabbi Akiva Eiger and others with all of their significant conditions, and the Chasam Sofer is also traveling in this path by also limiting it even in a slightly different application, but all of them saying that this is a very restricted idea, just a form of toelis. So it's not that everyone agreed with that. The Netziv, for example, in his commentary to the She'iltas and the Heimek She'olah, so he asks, he asserts differently, that he basically understands that bali machlokas are bali avera. That's again the theme of the parsha, that there's an issa machlokas, that people who fight for the sake of fighting are sinners, and therefore, because we sometimes find that hilchos lashon hara are not applicable to people who are rishayim, to people who are intentional sinners, so therefore you find that there's no issa here as well. So if that would be the understanding, you'd have a much broader application. So it seems like many of the Gedolei Achronim didn't really see it that way, didn't really understand that to be the issue, and they felt that it wasn't so much that the bali machlokas are sinners per se, it's that they are doing something harmful, they're doing something problematic, and therefore in order to stop that from happening, it's mutter to speak lashon hara. So why does the Chafetz Chaim and those on his side seem to disagree with this idea? So as many have suggested, the Chafetz Chaim himself elsewhere spells this out a little bit more, that machlokas is a complicated area, that even though it is an avera, it is a transgression, but it's one that people don't think they're doing anything wrong, that the nature of machlokas is that everyone thinks they're l'shem shamayim, everyone thinks that what they're doing is for the right purpose, has noble intentions, and they don't recognize that they're a little bit blinded and they don't have a complete perspective on the situation, and maybe they are indeed engaging in machlokas in a way that's really not justified, and therefore maybe there really is an Aveira going on, even if they don't fully appreciate it. So therefore, to label them as Bali Aveira and say that it's open season, so that we're not ready to do, even though the impact is one of Aveira. So it's interesting, why are we mentioning this specifically here? Well, clearly it's got thematic relevance to Parshas Korach, but it's specifically relevant to this pasuk, because the Gemara in the middle of Masechet Moed Katan, which has a couple of drushes on these pasukim in general, but the Gemara quotes this pasuk and has an interesting idea. It says that if you have a shliach bezdin, if Bezdin sends out a messenger to go summon someone to Bezdin, and let's say the messenger finds that the person he goes to get, the person who Bezdin is trying to bring in, so perhaps not so surprisingly, the guy is in mechutzef, the guy mouths off to him, the guy is going to basically snub him or insult him and turn him away. So is there a prohibition of Lashon Hara for the Shliach Bezdin to go back to the Bezdin and say, this is how the guy treated me, this is the attitude that I encountered when I went to go speak to him? So the Gemara says that no, that there is no such prohibition, that it's permissible for the Shliach Bezdin to go back and report this. So how do you know that? Because of this pasuk. Because here we have Dasan and Aviram, they have basically this pretty disrespectful response to the Shliach. They're summoned to the Bezdin with Moshe, and they basically say, no, poke our eyes out, we're still not going to come. So it's not the nicest kind of response. But apparently it was conveyed back to Moshe Rabbeinu. So as Rashi over there comments in Markad, Rashi's not really Rashi, but whoever is imitating Rashi in Markad and whoever's writing in his handwriting. So he says that, you see that not only did they say this, but it got back to Moshe. The Shliach Bezdin reported it back to Moshe, so therefore that's apparently the appropriate thing to do. And the appropriate thing to do is to report it back. And as the Sma points out, this is recorded in Shulchan Aruch, that you have such a din in Chosh Mishpat, that if the Shliach Bezdin is Mavuza, then they get to report it back. This is in Chosh Mishpat in the very beginning, in Simon Beis, in Sif Hei. So that psak, the Sma comments over there, that it could be the Shliach Bezdin made a mistake. And it could be that he shouldn't have said what he said. But when Rashi explains over there that this is why Moshe knew about it, because it was the right thing to do, he's explaining that that's why it was recorded in the Torah, that if the Shliach Bezdin had done something wrong by reporting this, so then Moshe wouldn't have acknowledged it, and it wouldn't have become recorded. But it's recorded in order to reflect the fact that the Shliach reported back to Moshe what was said, and that that was right of him to do, that that's permissible. You're allowed to do that. There is an interesting question in the Torah Tamima. I'm holding a Torah Tamima over here, so he discusses in the bottom that it's not really so compelling, because what Rashi says, so how did Moshe know? So there are many things that are in the Torah that Moshe was not present for. So we assume that a Kodesh Baruch Hu told him the things that happened, and even if he wasn't there, so Moshe wrote them down. So why should this be any different? So he suggests that we do have an attitude sometimes that even a Kadosh Baruch Hu is careful about not speaking Lashon Hara, that you find this in the episode of Achan and Sefer Yehoshua, the seventh parak of Yehoshua, when Achan was the one who took the hektish, who took the property that he wasn't supposed to take, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't reveal it directly. He says, one of my delator, my speaker of Lashon Hara. So even a Kadosh Baruch Hu is not going to necessarily identify sinners. So maybe here also, that even though there are a lot of things that Moshe wasn't present for, but something like this wouldn't necessarily have been related to Moshe Rabbeinu unless it was necessary and unless it was appropriate, so all of this shows us this din. So in any event, so then you have that idea that the Shliach Bezdin can report what was said to him based on this episode. So many ask the question, and Chassam Sofer again is quoted as asking this question, and many others ask this question, the Torah Tamima over here quotes others who asked this question, that the people we're talking about are Dasan v'Aviram. Dasan v'Aviram are among the most famous Bali Machlokas in history. So how do you understand how you could learn out this halacha from here, that if the Yerushalmi already told us the halacha, that it's mutter to speak Lashon Hara about Bali Machlokas, so that it's mutter to speak Lashon Hara about Dasan v'Aviram anyway. So then why can we derive from here that they were that the heter is based on the Shliach Beis Din reporting back to the Beis Din what happened. Maybe it's only because he was dealing with Dasan Ve'Aviram, and there Bali Machlokas. So there are many approaches that the Svarim talk about, many of which identify this Toelas aspect. Some point out that you could simply say that this is the Makir. How did Yerushalmi know that you could speak Lashon Hara about Bali Machlokas? It's all one episode, it's all one story. That we find from here that you can speak about the people who are Mabaz the Shliach Beis Din, and that is an expression of this idea that they're Bali Machlokas, and it's all one halacha, it's all derived from here. That's how some understand. Others point out that maybe you could distinguish between the two. For example, in the Sefer Yad Yosef, the commentary to Moikatan, it says the Keter for Bali Machlokas, that's only mutter when it's for the purpose of quieting down the machlokas. But here you're going to say what happened, essentially kind of like an act of rechilus, to go back and say what was said about the person. So rechilus is particularly pernicious because it causes machlokas. So this is not really going to quiet things down. You're going to go back to Moshe and say your appeal for peace was rebuffed. So this is not in the category of where we normally allow for the purpose of machlokas, and therefore this is an exception to that. Others suggest, there's an article in the journal Tvuna, where somebody suggested that it's only that you can identify the person as a Baal Machlokas, like the Sam Sofer said. If a person's already a Dua as a Baal Machlokas, as is the case with Dasan Ve'Aviram, so then you can't come and call them, you can't come and say further things about them. And Rav Nassim Gestetner, in his Sefer on Chumash, the Sefer Lahoris Nassim on Chumash, he says a little bit the opposite way. He says that really what was going on here, you see, when Moshe, why'd he bother sending anybody to Dasan Ve'Aviram? He knew that they were a Bali Machlokas. He knew there were people you can't ever win with. There are people who are always going to start a fight. You can't calm them down. They're not interested in making peace. So his whole attitude, says the Laharis Nasan, was really the opposite. His attitude was that he wanted to save Dasan Ve'Aviram as being perceived as these intractable Bali Machlokas, and he wanted to make this gesture in order to save them from that reputation, that he'll send these messengers to try to make peace, so that Dasan Ve'Aviram should not become established as known Bali Machlokas. So it was unsuccessful, but then to say that, okay, you can say whatever you want about them because they're Bali Machlokas, that is not an attitude that Moshe Rabbeinu would have got along with, because his whole point was that he did not want to sign on yet to the idea that they were established Bali Machlokas, and therefore that would not necessarily have been a obvious point without this din. So those all kind of revolve around the idea that the heter is really one based on Toelas, and it's an extension of the Toelas idea, so it's only mutter when it is the Toelas. You could say that if you wanted to take, let's say, the approach of the Netziv, and those who say that essentially it's because they're Bali Avera, and that's why it's mutter. So again, the question is, so why do we need the special pasuk in order to teach it, if that's a general idea? So you could say that it's kind of to respond to the Chafetz Chaim's consideration. When the Chafetz Chaim says that you can't stop label these people as Bali Avera because they think that they're Lishma, they think they're nobly intentioned, that they have the right motives, they don't realize that it's an Avera like you would necessarily find by other Averas that are more overt. But as much as Machlokas is an Avera, but it's one that doesn't play out in the same way. It's one that manifests itself in hiding, so to speak. So therefore we need a special limud for it. So it could be that maybe that's still the intent, that essentially they're a Bali Avera, but we need a special drasha, we need a special pasuk in order to make this point. So it's interesting that for our synergy, step one, this won't be the only one, that we find that this is an issue that comes up also in the context of Losir de Befarad, that the issur of giving people work that's too hard or that they don't want to do, however you understood it, based on what we discussed this week. So there is a discussion, particularly in that Sefer mentioned L'Re'acha Kamocha. There's also a lengthy discussion, there's a contemporary Sefer of Shailos and Shuvas called Adaris Tiferes. So in Chela Gimel and Simon Samach, he has a tshuva about this, and he has three or four more tshuvas about the issue of Losir Befarach on a Lamdish sense. You can definitely feel free to take a look over there. But in that Sefer, so, and elsewhere, so the question is raised about Latoelis, that if you're going to do it for their own good, so to speak, if you're the parent of a child who doesn't want to clean up his room, so still you tell him to anyway for his own good, or other such contexts where the person will benefit from being put to work, So then the assumption they have is that it's mutter, and this is essentially really a Gemara, Masechet Bava Metzia. It's a Gemara that actually is a little bit earlier than our paragraph. If you look at Ayin Gimel Amud Beis, so there is an episode where one of the Amoraim put some people to work because he saw that they were people who would not be productively employed otherwise, and they would cause problems. And the Gemara emphasized that there were people who misbehave, who were Noheg Shelo Keshura. So he has a discussion there. He's saying they misbehave to such an extent that they're rishoyim, that they're not osa maisa amcha, they're not entitled to the protection of the mitzvahs ben adam l'chaveru. So presumably not. Presumably they're not such terrible people. But it's a way of saying that it was l'toelos for them, that it was for their own benefit that they should be put to work, and that's why it should be mutter. So essentially it's the same type of question you have by this Isra Lashon Hara b'machlok, Bali Machlokas, is that because they're not subject to the protection of the Isra Lashon Hara, or is it simply the Toelas to keep them out of the Machlokas? So here you find basically the same question, that when there is sometimes a license extended to apparently violate this, or do what would otherwise be a violation of Lo Sir de Befarach, so is that because the people involved are not entitled to such protection? Or is it no, because that's also a principle of Toelas? If it's going to have that effect, so then it should be mutter. So that's one piece of synergy. We'll have a little bit more in a minute. So Rav Nosson Gestetner, in his interpretation, he also takes note of the fact, first of all, that the Chassam Sofer, he saw us as a similar thing in the Taurus Moshe on Parshas Korach, which is interesting because he's then answering his own question, because he's quoted in the Gilyon HaShas in Peah as asking why we need a separate pasuk for this Din of Shliach Beis Din when we already have the Din of Balei Machlokes. And then the answer is apparently the same answer he gives in the Sefer Taurus Moshe. So in any event, you could take a look over there. But he also goes on to mention something else, the Laharish Nasa and Sefer, just in a whole different angle, not talking about the Yisr of Lashon Hara or the Balei Machlokes, but just this language of Hainei Hanashim Ahim Tanaker. So talking about the eyes, so it could mean literal eyes, or it could also mean the Einei Ha'eda. It could mean the leaders. The leaders should be taken out. And we won't, lo na'aleh, could mean, you know, like a reference to Eretz Elaz Chalav Dvash. This is all an extension of the Meraglim, that you could take out the leaders and we won't go up. That the Zohar, referencing Parsha Shlach, the Zohar tells us that the issue with the Meraglim, the reason the Meraglim didn't want to have a positive attitude towards Eretz Yisrael, is because they were leaders. But we know that they were anoshim, they were people of stature. And many of them were afraid that when they crossed over into Eretz Yisrael, things would change so much, they would no longer have their leadership status. So therefore, they didn't want to make that shift, and they discouraged going into Eretz Yisrael. They painted this very negative picture. So that would then flow here, that they're saying that Einei Hanashim Hayim Tanaker, that the leaders, the Einei Ha'eda, they could be taken away, they could be deposed, and still we're not interested in following Yemosha, we're not interested in going up. Okay, in any event, to move on to the next pasuk. So the next pasuk says, Vayichar l'Moshe ma'od. So Moshe gets very upset. But it's if comments, not angry per se, it doesn't say Vayichar ba'po. It's not the language used for anger, but it's he's offended. He's definitely hurt. And it's interesting, as the Netziv comments, that this is not the same attitude that you see just 2 weeks ago in Parshas Balosva. So he is spoken badly about by Aaron and Miriam, and we don't find that Moshe gets offended. We find that he's very forgiving. And yet here he's upset, here he's offended. So why is he offended here and he wasn't offended there? So the Netziv comments that in Parshas Baloscha it was personal. They didn't show him enough kavod. Okay, so he's mochel on his kavod. He doesn't need to take that personally. But this affects his leadership. This is something that's being said in front of the people, and it's being claimed that he's not a good leader, that he's not going to be able to have service the people for their own sake. So that's something that gets him angry. That's something, or not angry, but something that gets him hurt. And he responds, and he says, "Vayomer el Hashem, al tefen el min chasam, lo chamor echad mehem nosasi, v'lo hariosi es achad mehem." So this is all very interesting. He's upset. So he says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says, don't turn to their mincha. What does that mean, don't turn to their mincha? Says the Ramban comments, it means that you shouldn't accept their mincha, their offerings, their karban, and their tefillah. That the word mincha, we know, also includes a tefillah. So this is an interesting idea. Here Moshe is saying, don't accept their tefillah. What's he really worried about? He really thinks that their tefillah is going to be so powerful. So Reb Simcha Zussel Broi, the Chevener Rosh Hashiv in his Sefer Sam Derech, so he suggests that you just see here the power of tefillah, that here even these people who are obviously on a pretty low level, Moshe is worried that their tefillah could be effective and even effective to undo an existing nevuah. And then presumably what he's getting at, therefore, is that is what Moshe has to counteract with a tefillah. Because even if that's the case, so what's he doing about it? So he says, Vayomer HaLashem, what does that mean? That God doesn't realize that they're not the greatest people in the world? That he has to inform God that they're not such wonderful, pure, motivated people? So presumably that's not the intent. Presumably this is also a tefillah. This is Moshe praying to God to counteract their tefillah. And all of that is a statement to the power of tefillah, that really they do have the ability to accomplish something bad because of the power of tefillah. And Moshe has to counteract that with his tefillah. Bezalel Radinsky in his Sefer Mishkan Bezalel has a comment where he takes this a little bit further. And he connects it to the end of the pasuk of Lo Chamor Achad Mehem Nosasi V'lo Hariosi Es Achad Mehem. So he comments that we do find, similar to what we said a second ago, we do find that tefillah is very powerful, even people who are not worthy. And that's the idea you also find in the context of the Ir Miklat, that when people are sent off to the Ir Miklat, so the Gemara tells us in Maseches Makis and the Mishnayos talk about that they would only leave when the Kohen Gadol died. And therefore, the mothers of the Kohanim, mother of the Kohen Gadol, would bring pastries, would bring cake and cookies and all kinds of delicacies for the people in the Ir Miklat to keep them from praying that their son should die. So it's an interesting kind of consideration. Hard to see how that's really going to motivate them to stay. I mean, there's good mezonos in the world, but that it should be so good that this is going to be worth it for them to stay in the Ir Miklat and not want to leave for the bakery. It's pretty impressive mezonos. So, as he explains over there in Mishkan Bezalel, that basically it's hard to believe that their tefillah should work, that their tefillah, these shogeg murderers are going to daven the Kohen Gadol should die, so why should they have first dibs? Presumably the Kohen Gadol doesn't want to die, presumably he's also davening the other direction. So why are we worried about them? So he basically says that when somebody is davening really with absolute full intent and full kavanah, so it's a very powerful thing. So the effect of these mezonos was not really going to outweigh their desire to be free, but it was going to soften it a little bit if things were comfortable for them in the Ir Miklat. So they're not going to have that same kind of passion, not going to have that same kind of devotion, and that's what they would have required in order to accomplish such a far-fetched goal. So he suggests that's also why the pasuk ends, Lo chamor echad mehem nosasi, lo hariosi es echad mehem. Why does Moshe have to say all that? So he's basically emphasizing that they don't have a tefillah against me. I didn't do anything to them. So the idea that they should be able to daven with such full efficacy, that they should be such so powerful in their tefillah, it doesn't make sense because I didn't do anything to deserve that. I'm not a leader who really profited off his people, that should be the case. The Lubavitch Rebbe has an interesting point here also. Like he has a whole essay in the recently published volume Yesichus, where he also talks about this idea, says, Al Tefen Al Achad Mehem. So he talks about that, about how not just don't accept it, but don't pay any attention to them at all. The Al Tefen don't even turn to the Gavra. And Rashi's language, after saying that, Rashi has a sentence here, Midrasho Amar, Yodeya ani sheyesh lahem chelek b'smidei tzibur. I know that Moshe says, that they have a portion in the tmidim of the tzibur, so av chalkam lo yukubal lefanech l'ratzo. Tenechenu ha'esh v'lo sochle, v'lo tochlenu. He says, even that shouldn't be accepted. Their part, their chelek, in the korban tzibur, of the tamid tzibur, that shouldn't be accepted. So the Bavitch Rebbe has just an interesting piece about this where he says, a little bit in a spiritual sense, that it's interesting because it's not totally true to say that they have a part in the Tmidim. The Tmidim is a Korban Tzibur. So a Tzibur is a mass entity. It's not a Korban Shutfim. It's not a bunch of people brought together. Personal identity gets negated in the context of the Tzibur. So it's not as if there's some kind of identifiable part of the Korban Tamid that is connected to these individuals. It's all aggregated into this one unit of the tzibur. So he suggests that when Rashi says Moshe is telling us Yodeyani, why is he putting in that phrase Yodeyani? I know, because explaining that it's only I who know this, that really a Korban Sibor, everybody should be melted into one big pot. There's no individual identity. But the Nasi, the leader, Moshe, he recognizes that he relates to the people in two different ways. He relates to the people as leader of the aggregate, leader of the Tzibor, and also leader of every individual by themselves. That was part of his whole mentality. So because he is Mesiachis to both halves, they exist both as an entity, as an individual. So because of that recognition, that's why their portion in the Talmud is significant. So it's only because he is their leader that they have this chelek in the Korban Sibor. So that's what Moshe is referring to. And as a consequence of their rebellion against him, that's what he's calling attention to. It's an interesting idea. In any event, this whole idea of lo chamer echad mehem nasasi, so the Gemara says in Maseches Megillah that this is one of the psukim that was changed in the Septuagint. And we know that when Talmi HaMelech gathered together all the Talmidei Chachamim, that they should all write in separate rooms and they should translate the Torah into Greek. So the Gemara says in Megillah that there were a couple of miraculous events, that even though they couldn't talk to each other, and that was his whole point, that they should write the Torah translation by themselves and he'll know that they're doing it correctly because they'll all match up. So there are certain words, the Gemara says, where we were worried that translated into the vernacular would lead to misinterpretation, would lead to some type of kfira or some type of danger. So therefore, they didn't actually translate it directly, they translated it a little bit differently. And it was a miracle that all of the Rabbanan who were collected here were able to figure out the same thing independently and to recognize what they shouldn't put into this translation. So one of the examples is this pasuk that they changed the lo chamor echad to lo chemer echad, that there was not any nice thing that he took. That they were afraid, apparently, that the way they would read it is, I didn't take a chamor, I took smaller things. That's that big of a thing I didn't take. I took a little gift, as if he's saying, listen, I only stole from the people a little bit, I didn't steal from them that much, so why should they be so angry at me? So that's not the intent of the pasuk, but they're worried that it might be misinterpreted that way. So they changed it to mean he didn't take anything at all, which would be the intent anyway. And it reflects the fact that one of the concerns they had was also just that there shouldn't be a libel, there shouldn't be an attack against the Jewish people based on misreading the psukim, and that was something that they also included within it. It's also interesting, so here we'll see a little bit of synergy also, so this idea, I didn't take any of their donkeys, so what, were he so proud that he didn't steal from them? Is that really what he's saying? We would have thought otherwise that he would have stolen from them. Is that what it means? So the Gemara, Mesachas Nedarim, Adaf Lamaches, Simon Aleph, the Gemara says that he didn't even take against their will while paying for it. Even Ba'agra, even if he was going to pay for it, so he didn't take from them. And the Ran explains there that even if he were to pay for it, he didn't want to be Nana from their property. That wouldn't have been appropriate. So that level of Kpeda he had. But the Rush has a different girsa. That the Rush says that the Gemara also over there has a discussion that Moshe Rabbeinu was rich, and therefore that's why he didn't even need to do this. He didn't need to take anything from the people. And the Gemara has a statement of Dilma Anihu. Maybe he didn't take Agra. He didn't take these donkeys and pay for them because he didn't have anything. So maybe he was poor. That's the way Rashi and Tosfos read it. The Rush reads it differently. The Rush says, the Gersa says, V'dilma anavu, which is a little bit of a funny Gersa, because if you would say Dilma, then maybe Moshe was an anav, but the Torah says he was anav b'kol adam. I think we could safely say he was definitely anav, but it's a different usage of the word. So the Gersa says, Dilma anav, maybe he was a person who was restrained, who was careful, who was modest in his goals. And as the Rush explains, so that means that he wouldn't have imposed a tircha on people, even if he was paying them, even if he was going to pay them from the chamor, he wouldn't want to inconvenience them. So in the interest of synergy, right, so that's essentially what we saw also this week in terms of the poem, right, in terms of the Isser of Loser de Befarach, that the view of the Rishonim, such as the Sefer Achinuch al-Pi Derech HaMusar, and the Maharam Rutenberg, I don't think we mentioned the Meiri in Kedushin says this also, that the Isser applies also to a poel, to even somebody who you're paying. So the Torah recognizes that even when you're paying someone, there's still a limit to how much you want to inconvenience them or how much you want to stress them out despite the fact that they're being paid. So that's what Moshe was saying. Yes, even if I was going to compensate them, even if I was going to pay them for the giving of their donkey, I'm still not going to be matriach them against their will, and that's something I should be praised for. It's interesting, so just to extend that point for a second, so I mentioned before the Tshuva Sederes Tiferes, so he has it's a real sefer, it's not just a poem, but so he rhymes whether you're Ashkenazis or Sephardis, it goes either way, but all that work goes better in Ashkenazis. But in any event, so he discusses there, which is parallel to what we discussed in Shir earlier in the year about Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Michshol, which, interestingly enough, in that Sefer L'Reacha Kamocha that we mentioned, these are the two Yisurim he has in the same volume, two concepts we talked about this year, Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Michshol and Lo Sir De Lefarach. So in the question, when the Torah says you shouldn't be Machshol and Iver, you shouldn't trip up a blind person, so Chazal understand that to mean that you shouldn't help somebody do an Aveira. So there's a big question that we're going to talk about, that we talked about in Shira at length, that what if you give somebody a Chefta Shal Aveira, let's say you give somebody some non-kosher food to eat, and the mice in the end, they don't end up eating it. So if they don't eat it, are you still in violation of Lifnei Iver, or are you only in violation if they actually trip, so to speak, if they actually do the Aveira? But if you give the Michshol and they don't take it, so maybe you're not in violation of Lifnei Iver. That was a discussion we had in that sugya. So the Aderes Tiferes talks about here also, the Yisr of Losir de Befarach says, what happens if you give an instruction to your Eved or your Poel, whoever you understand this is applying to, that would be violating this standard, and they don't do it. They don't actually do the work you instruct them to, but they don't do it, are you still in violation? So he assumes, b'pshitas, he thinks it's pashut, that you're not going to be in violation, because the whole issue is to work them this way. If they're not working, then you're not violating anything. I'm not so sure it's so pashut. You could say differently. You could say that it's a psychological concept, as we've seen a little bit this week. So therefore, it's about the hisyachsus, it's about how the boss treats the worker. So if the boss tries to get the worker to do something, that's degrading. The fact that the guy doesn't do it may not necessarily mitigate that. It may still represent a certain type of relationship between the employer and the employee, and perhaps we could say that that's still going to be problematic even if the person doesn't actually do it. So it's an interesting suffix to have as far as this sister is concerned. And that's just one more word about that topic that we spent some time on during the week. So we'll just mention one more idea, and then I'll let you go. It's just this next pasuk. And when this pasuk says, "Avayomer Moshe al Korach," Moshe says to Korach, "Ata v'chaladascha heyu lufnei Hashem ata v'heim v'aron mochar." So you will all be in front of Hashem tomorrow. But that is a continuing reference to this Bezdin idea. And it's a way, the Gemara understands it to mean that this is where you see the concept that there has to be a hazmana to din, that somebody has to be invited to din, that there has to be an official process. That's where he's instructing them. There's going to be this whole ordeal tomorrow as a reflection of that idea. All right, these are some of the ideas that appear in the second Aliyah of Parshas Korach, and they tap in to this broader theme. There's a very serious prohibition of machlokas. It's very hard for us to sometimes be on top of that, to be aware of what it means. Machlokas l'shem shemayim, machlokas shelo l'shem shemayim. It's very easy to make the wrong call. And the Kutzker Rebbe made the famous comment that the Mishnah says in Perkei Avos that a machlokas l'shem shemayim is considered to be a machlokas that's so full of skayim, a machlokas is going to last, and a machlokas shelo l'shem shemayim is so fully batel, it's not going to last. So the Kutzker Rebbe said that, that's the problem, that if you think the machlokas is l'shem shemayim, it'll go on forever. But if you don't think it's l'shem shemayim, you realize it's not such a big deal, so then it's going to eventually phase out. So that's the Kutzker way of saying it, but we normally understand it differently, that sofa l'skayim means it's good, and that sofli batel means it's bad. The idea being sofli skayim, but if it's about real issues, so then it's going to have eternal significance, that's going to last. But if it's about personalities, if it's about personal kapedas, then that's not something that deserves to last. That's not something that's going to be a part of the intellectual legacy of the world. But in any event, the Mishnah says that it's Korach v'Adaso that reflect the bad machlokas, and that it's Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai that reflect the good machlokas, and machlokas l'shem shemayim. And many, many Meforshim note that there is a lack of parallelism here, that there is a reference to Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai as the two parts of the machlokas, but on the other side, the bad machlokas is Korach v'Adaso. It should say Korach v'Moshe. Those are the two sides. So it's not really parallel. Why does it say Korach v'Adaso? So many, many Meforshim all say the same idea, that the notion is that within Korach's camp, they weren't really on the same side either. They were also at odds with each other, because each one was out for his own covet, each one wanted his own thing. So they weren't really ba'achdus, it was really an alliance. They came together because they had a common enemy. They all wanted to attack Moshe, but they didn't really have any achdus together. So that's reflection, that's reflective of Machlokas L'Sholol L'Shem Shemayim. I saw for a Pesach, maybe we mentioned it a little bit earlier, I think it came up in our Parsha Shir also earlier in the year, that it's a little jarring that by Yetzias Mitzrayim, when the Egyptians came to chase after the Jews, so the Pasuk says, Rashi comments in the Pasuk, Rashi says, V'lev echad ki ish echad. And that sounds like we're so proud of ourselves. By Har Sinai, we say, ki ish echad v'lev echad, and here the same thing is said about the Mitzrayim. So what's the big deal if they could be it? So it's not such a point of pride for us. So putting their comments in a Sefer on Pesach, it's not the same thing, it's inverted. Right, that by the Mitzrayim it says B'lei V'chad Ki Ish Echad, and by the Jews at Har Sinai it says Ki Ish Echad B'lei V'chad. The point being that by the Jews Ki Ish Echad B'lei V'chad means because they all felt that they were one person, they were all Ish Echad, so then they're B'lei V'chad, they have one purpose as one person. But by the Mitzrayim it was more of an alliance with each other, that they were all B'lei V'chad, they all wanted to go chase after the Jews. So for that reason they functioned Ki Ish Echad, so they got together to reflect their common goal. But that's not the true type of achdus, and perhaps that's what's reflected here as well. The others point out the Rebbe Pavarsky in Sefer Bar Kodesh, in terms of the Korach v'Adaso reference, says the reason it doesn't say Korach v'Moshe is because Moshe wasn't fighting. Moshe wasn't fighting back. It was all Korach attacking him. And that's reflective also, as Rebbe Zalman Goldberg points out in an article, that if the Isser is to be like Korach, so then it means that not being like Korach means you have to be like Moshe. And Moshe, we see, not only was he not the one causing the fight, but he even was ready to be mochel on his covet and do whatever he needed to in order to make peace. So that's apparently the flip side. You can't be the one who's a Baal Machlokas. You also have to be the one who's like Moshe, who's trying to do what you can to smooth things over, and that's a whole different mentality. And that's apparently also reflected here in this issue, that in the language of the Gemara in the end of Sanhedrin, it says Hamachzik Machlokas, not just whoever starts a fight, but whoever gives strength to it, whoever holds on to a machlokas, and that's how the commentators explain it. Tara Tamima has a comment, and it reveals to Epstein, who wrote the Sefer on Shalom, Mitzvah Shalom, discussed this as well. You see, the issue is not just to start a fight, but it's to keep it going, to give it more fuel, to give it more strength, even if you're not the one who starts it. So then it's also a violation. You have to not be like Korach, have to try very hard to be like Moshe instead. It's not such an easy task, but that's the overwhelming message of this week's Parsha. All right, so we'll stop here. So we'll meet again Monday night, God willing. And again, from Monday on, we'll try to go pretty much straight from, let's say, around Ayin Vav, Ayin Zayin. This is good to do the Gemara straight.